Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We do continue on as we get into hour number two of the program, taking you until 8 o'clock tonight at 8 o'clock. We have the Gas House Gang, so you get more of me. It's me and Bernie Miklas this evening, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock for today's edition of the program. Of course, if you're not familiar with the Gas House Gang, it is a video show that we do every day at 12 noon, and then we replay it as a radio show at night at 8 o'clock. But if you ever, maybe it's your lunch hour or something, you're looking for something to do, you can head to the KMOX Sports social media channels, and you can find us right there at 12 noon, Monday through Friday. All right, want to get more into some of the things, just my comments on some of the things that John Mozeliak said yesterday. And like I said, the phone lines are open now, so if you've got any thoughts on what Mo said yesterday, this Arenado situation, where the team is at this offseason, and also in terms of trying to put together redo player development, and some impressive hires have come down. If you've got any thoughts on that, we'll certainly welcome in your phone calls. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air, or you can leave a voice message if you would like via the Odyssey app. Just click the little microphone button, and that comes straight into the studio. So those are the various ways that you can get in contact with the program. I do think that there is some, people are getting tired of the Arenado conversation, and I get that. But it's also the thing that is most important in this offseason because, as we've mentioned a million times, it's so much of what's being figured out for moving forward. I do want to play a few more clips, though, from Mo before we get done with that. Thought this was interesting because, part of I have made the argument, and this is not me denigrating the job that John Mozeliak has. He has a very important job. There's only a very finite number of human beings walking the face of the earth who make final roster decisions for Major League Baseball teams. Every team's got one guy. So it's a pretty exclusive group that John Mozeliak is in. I'm not denigrating the importance of that job. But what I am doing is lifting up the importance of the job that Chaim Bloom is doing. And that is starting the reset of the player development. I think he's already done a great job with the hires that have been made. Whether it was Rob Serfolio or the different directors and coordinators and things like that that have been announced, you look at these names that are coming into the organization, and it is incredibly, incredibly impressive. And that's just step one. There are many steps that need to be taken for this whole thing to work. There are a lot of things that have to go right for us to be sitting here 2-3 years down the road and for everybody to kind of go, oh, okay, I get it now. I see what they were trying to do. Yeah, there were some growing pains through all that, but that all kind of makes sense now. We are nowhere near that. And for a fan base that has seen a ton of winning in recent years, that still is going to be a hard sell. But this is, I thought this was interesting for Mo because he was talking about his job. And yes, his job is to build the roster for the 2025 Cardinals, 100%. But his job is also to help set things up for Chaim Bloom and company in 2026 and beyond. And that's a healthy part of this transition because you don't want a thing where you're not worried about what the people after you are going to be dealing with. And I thought that was, and just the dynamic, the office dynamic inside of baseball operations with the St. Louis Cardinals right now, I think is fascinating. And I'm not overstating that. Fascinating is a word we use way too often. I'm not overstating it. I truly believe it is fascinating because you have Chaim Bloom, who's not there every day, who has a project that he's working on before he takes over as the director of baseball operations. You have a bunch of people that Chaim Bloom wanted in place. He and Rob Serfolio wanted in place, you know, Serfolio plus everybody else. You have all these people who have, you know, basically walked into the office and they're part of the brain trust. But then you still have this other guy in Mozeliak who is still there, is still the most important decision maker, but the people that he's collaborating with, the people that he's throwing things off of, they look a little different now. They sound a little different now. It's a different group of people. The comfort, the familiarity, it's not there like it was before. And it's just, it is a very interesting dynamic. And Mo talked about that a little bit yesterday and talked about how part of his job this year is trying to set up the next regime for as much success as possible.
Some of the decisions that I'm making or part of making right now are about setting up for the next generation or for the next group of leadership. And look, we already know who that is. That person's been hired, signed, and you know he's focused right now really on building up what he wants his team to look like as far as from a front office standpoint. My responsibility this year has been to help in any way I can on that side of the house, but also trying to think through like what we want this roster to look like really in 2026, 2027 and beyond. And so, you know, that's just been more of a collaborative model than maybe I've had to deal with in the past.
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, credit, I know it's sometimes people don't want to hear it. Credit to John Mozeliak for considering the thoughts of Chaim Bloom and company when it comes to making decisions that have ramifications for beyond 2025. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday when the arbitration stuff came down. When we see that there's three players that they don't come to an agreement on, and you look at those three players and you can see scenarios where any of those players could potentially get multi-year deals. Generally, the philosophy of the organization is if they don't come to an agreement by yesterday's date, well, if they are going to come to an agreement, that agreement comes along with a second or a third year, the way that they did with Tommy Edman last year. It's not as simple now, because if you're John Mozeliak and you're thinking about giving Lars Nootbaar a second year, well, what does Chaim Bloom think about Lars Nootbaar? What does Chaim Bloom think about Brendan Donovan? What's Bloom's long-term plans on how he wants Donovan on the roster? How much belief from Chaim Bloom is there in an Andre Pallante? And that can complicate things a little bit. Because if John Mozeliak has all the confidence and belief in the world in an Andre Pallante, but Chaim Bloom doesn't, well, then Mo's probably going to stay away from giving Pallante that second year, so you're not entangling the next regime with your decisions. Now, there's going to be times where there's just ramifications to future rosters for sure. That's going to happen. But that's another part of this transition that I find to be very interesting. Something, and this might be actually something that I'm not a huge fan of. I look forward to talking with Rob Serfolio and talking with Chaim Bloom about this at some point in the future. Because something that we've talked about a lot on this show, and Kevin Wheeler and I have talked a lot about, one of the things I most appreciate about the way that the Cardinals are developing pitching right now, and there's some things that they can do better. They need to get guys who throw harder. They need to do a bunch of stuff. But one of the things that I think they're doing a really good job on in the minor leagues is allowing pitchers to go deep into games. They led minor league baseball in that category, you know, longest pitchers who went deepest into games. And is that going to continue on? Is the pitching philosophy going to change? Well, Mo basically said that expect changes in the way the Cardinals do develop pitching moving forward.
I would imagine that's going to change under Heim and Cerf because, you know, clearly they're making a large investment in human capital on how to, you know, really sort of change the trajectory of what you're seeing with our pitching.
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see what that looks like moving forward. And those are more telling comments, I think, from, you know, you kind of read between the lines on some things, though, when we have interviews like we had yesterday. And I think you can start to learn some of what's going on. All right, when we come back, we are going to talk Billikens basketball. They have had a really solid start to conference play. They are 3-0 in the league after a disappointing non-conference portion of the season. What has led to that? The voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey, who you hear right here on KMOX, along with Earl Austin Jr. We'll hear from him coming up in just a moment. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Recovered by Kobe Johnson. Now to Swope, weaving through traffic. Cross court to Jimerson. NBA range. Bang! Jimerson in transition.
Started with the Robbie Ava LeBlanc once again. Isaiah with a beautiful cross court to Gibby in the rhythm of the catch. And another 10-point lead.
A fun moment for sure as St. Louis University got a big win against St. Bonaventure earlier in the week, 73-68. And what do you know? The Billikens are 3-0 in Atlantic 10 play. You just heard Bob Ramsey. Let's go ahead and bring him on to the program, play-by-play voice of the Billikens. Rammer, appreciate you taking some time. I know you got eyes on the college football game all at the same time, so thanks for finding some time for us as well.
Well, yeah, that's what we do, right? Because I'm sure that there's not a monitor without the football game on where you are, too.
No, we are, we're definitely paying attention for sure. Hey, what's, I know a lot of things lead to a team kind of finding a new rhythm, but it really feels like since conference play has gotten started, this Billikens team has found that new gear.
There are a number of factors in my view. One of them is the gradual health and stability of Robbie Avila's ankle. That was, for those who've forgotten, he rolled it pretty bad twice in a couple of weeks' time. And I think that started to come back and he started to feel like himself again, started to get his legs back under him. And I think one of the things that Coach Schertz had been disappointed in the first 6 weeks of the season, and that is an inability to run their defense efficiently, stopping straight line drives, trusting each other, understanding what the team defensive concepts were. And I think that has gradually come about. Still not perfect, but it's gradually come about. And I think, tried with so many injuries for the coaching staff just to figure out, okay, what do we have and what do we have with matchups and a rotation tonight on a given night? And I think all those things and others have started to come together a little bit for the Billikens, and it really makes a difference. The one thing that you still have hope for is even better health, guys getting healthy. In particular, Kellen Thames, the Pattonville High School, former Pattonville High School star, Matt, who, you know, has a situation where instead of giving you the 25, 30 minutes a night, he's been restricted to under 15. And we saw he was just in his, I think it was 13:40, something like that the other night, was absolutely dynamic on both ends of the floor. And if you can get Kellen even up to 20 minutes a game, that is a huge boost for this club. So I think there's a lot more growth possible for this squad.
Is it fair to say that when Avila was out with the ankle issue, that really slowed down Coach Schertz's ability to kind of put in his offense and put in what he wanted to do because he wasn't available to be in there for practice?
Oh, yeah, without question. Yeah, no doubt about it. And you still had guys playing and contributing and competing, But this has been a learning process ever since the staff and the players came in June. And it's admittedly a pretty steep learning curve to play they want to play, the way they want to play. And Coach mentioned to me the other night that one of the keys is when your players start to get it and can execute, we're talking in particular offense here, can execute offense with the coach without the coach having to sort of be the maestro and orchestrate each and every play. When the players start to get it and start to feel it at the same time, he goes, that's when this thing starts to click.
You've been around this game for a long time. Is there something liberating about when you have you have high expectations going in the season, you have a non-conference season that does not meet expectations, when you turn the calendar and get to conference play and these games really start having meaning again, does that give a team almost this new sense of life and purpose?
If you win.
Yeah.
Now, if you were 1-2 or God forbid 0-3, not very liberating, but they kept. I think the key is I think what you're talking about is timing and getting better as the season goes on. Some teams do that. The good teams keep getting better as they go. Some teams kind of stagnate and kind of putz around and, you know, never really find that extra gear. And some teams regress. Some teams start playing well and then they get into the grind of their conference. And we look up and down the standings of some of the great conferences around the country, and it is a grind, and they start to fall apart. The grind of it eats them up. So, but when you've got a team that knows that they have room to grow and it's a legitimate potential to grow, you know, you're not asking a walk-on to suddenly start scoring 20 points a game. That's silly. It's unrealistic. But I'll go back to Kellen Thames. We've seen what Kellen can do. And so as he's able to play more and more, you see how that dynamic will definitely affect the way the team goes. And with the big three, with Robbie and the Swope Show and Gibson Jimerson, when you've got those three guys clicking and healthy, you know, there's your core. That's what you build around. And then it's a matter of having the other players figuring out where they fit in.
Gibson's in a really interesting spot because he was around before, and you know, he's put into that big three with those other two guys, but those other two guys have been you know, familiar with Coach Schertz and familiar with the system. What have you seen, and how much do you get the sense that Jimerson has enjoyed kind of assimilating both with those other two guys and also being part of this Josh Schertz system?
Well, I know he loves it, and it fits perfectly with the way he likes to work and his work ethic. And he is a marvelous worker and a great guy. And he's one of those guys that's a good teammate. He's a very quiet person, but he leads by example and putting the work in. And even on those rare nights, it's only been a couple really all year, maybe three, that shots aren't really falling for him, or he's, you know, been the top of the scouting chart for the opposition and he really can't, they don't let him get loose. Even on those nights, the work rate never falls. The work rate is always there because there's always ways to help in getting to open space and setting screens and passing and doing all the other things you do to be a great basketball player. So I think you're right. He is flourishing in this system, but I think that's kind of what we all expected. We all expected with a little more freedom and other weapons to help provide that freedom, that there was no reason that Gibson Jimerson shouldn't have a great final season.
Billikens get the weekend off, and then they've got a big test coming up this week. They'll go to VCU and Richmond Tuesday, Saturday of next week. This VCU game, VCU's good. They've got a good record. They've got wins against Boston College and Miami and Colorado State. I mean, this is nothing against St. Bonaventure. That was a good test and a really good win. But are we going to learn something about the Billikens come Tuesday?
Yeah, and keep in mind, St. Bonaventure beat VCU. And so this is going to be a challenge. You know, the Billikens have never won at VCU. Zero victories there. So you've got that that bugaboo, that jinx, that thing hanging over your head. It's a little bit of a different VCU as I see him from afar, not having seen him in person yet, obviously, in that maybe a little more offensive-minded, a little more three-point shooting-minded, and then and maybe not the relentless, absolutely smothering 94 feet of defense. I'm not suggesting they're not a good defensive team. They are. But a slightly different look. So why do I bring that up? Maybe it gives you hope to go into one of the great atmospheres in college basketball and find a way to win. And the Billikens are a different team. VCU's not played a Josh Church team. So this is going to be a real interesting showdown on Tuesday, but it will absolutely be a tall challenge.
Last thing for you before we get you out of here, quick baseball question. Are you worn out on the Nolan Arenado talk? Are you ready for there just to be some finality to this whole thing?
Well, you know I am, and I've always been a fan of Arenado, and he and his agent and their strategy is confusing to me, and I expect it's someday we'll talk all about it. I really thought the Astros thing made great sense for him, for the Astros, for the Cardinals. It just seemed like, oh, yeah, of course, they'll get that deal done. And then Arenado and his people back out. And the other things we're hearing, you know, Boston, a couple of other spots, it doesn't seem to make as much sense. But I'm not the one working with his contracts and what makes him happy. You know, the bottom line for a player, don't run from happiness. Where are you going to be happy? Well, and that's where you want to play, right? And will they be able to get it done? You know, I think that I know the Cardinals would like to have some clarity there so they know how to move forward with their young players in that third base spot. But it has not been an easy process. And I will tell you, Matt, because I am a fan, and he's as good a third baseman as we've ever seen in St. Louis for sure. If he's back at the hot corner for the Cardinals, and whether he's hitting third or sixth, I don't care, because he's a really good player. So it's going to work out one way or the other, and I know the Cardinals want to move him, but until there's some real news, it's kind of hard to really get beyond it.
Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr., though, of the call of the Billikens and VCU at VCU coming up Tuesday night, 6 o'clock tip. That means our coverage begins at 5:45. Rammer, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the football game, and we'll talk real soon.
Have a great weekend, Matt, and all the KMOX listeners. Talk to you Tuesday.
Awesome. Very good. That's Bob Ramsey joining us here on the program. We appreciate him spending a little bit of time with us. Yeah, it's an interesting game coming up against VCU coming up on Tuesday. And Rammer's right when he mentions the fact that VCU did lose to St. Bonaventure. Now, they lost at St. Bonaventure, not at home. And it was a really, really tight game, 77-75. Yeah, but that's a good VCU team. And they scheduled well this year. I mentioned some of those teams that they've got wins against. They won a neutral site game against Boston College. They won a neutral site game against Miami. They won a neutral site game against Colorado State. So they've played a good number of neutral site games against some solid teams and come away with victories. And now this is going to be one of their tougher games. But it's been fun being able to watch what's going on with SLU here since conference play got started. Really, you look at everything going on college basketball wise when it comes to the major conference teams. Again, not taking anything obviously away from the MVCs and the OVCs that we have in the area, but just specifically when you're talking about SLU, Mizzou, and Illinois, the stories have been pretty darn good. Pretty darn good for the most part of what's going on. Mizzou basketball, it was good to see them get a league win after going winless in league play last year. They were able to come away with the win their last time out when they knocked off LSU, and they're going to play host to Vanderbilt in a game that's going to be coming up tomorrow. And then also Illinois has just been, I like this Illinois team a lot. They're fun to watch. They play hard. It seems like they're just a Brad Underwood coach team, and that's a good thing. Like this is a good group for Underwood to be coaching, up to number 13 in the nation. They're going to match up against USC in a game that's taking place in Champaign coming up tomorrow. So good stuff all the way around when it comes to college basketball. And we're coming up on that time, you know, as college football really is wound down. We're just one game left after tonight. At that point, we can really start to focus in on what's going on in college basketball. And College basketball conference play, man, it goes by fast. It starts right around the start of the new year, and before you know it, we're talking conference tournaments, and we're talking March Madness, and we're talking all these things. It happens incredibly quickly. So if you're not paying attention, sometimes it sneaks up on you. If you're not paying attention to what's going on in the world of college basketball, might be worth your time, because we've got some really, really good stories in the area for sure. And we're going to work on talking to some more folks connected with those programs here moving forward. We are going to shift back to baseball in just a moment or so. It is a Friday, so what do we do on Friday? We bring in our guy Kevin Wheeler, talk our weekly baseball conversation with him. That's up next. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We are starting to wrap up the program. But before we get out of here for the night, it is a Friday, and that means we welcome in our good friend. You hear him on the Dave Glover Show. He is Kevin Wheeler. Hey, Kevin.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm all right.
Feeling better?
I'm okay.
It's looking good.
First day back in the office.
Yeah, you're in the building.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be in the room with you, yeah. So you must be looking all right.
Well, I've been on meds long enough now that I no longer am contagious to other people.
Yeah, I figured that. You wouldn't be here if you were.
No, I wouldn't
trust
do that.
You.
I like most of you. So there you go. Wanted to go through a few things. I don't know how much of you heard of what John Mozeliak said to Mike Claiborne and myself yesterday during the countdown show, but there was a few things he said that I thought were interesting. We talked about today on the Gas House Gang, mm-hmm. Bernie and I did. I wanted to kind of bring it back with you as well. And I'll start with what I thought was the most interesting, where he said, yeah, when I said that we intended to trade Nolan Arenado, thought I had a deal done for him. I appreciate the honesty. It makes me wonder, is that Houston? Is that somebody else? It creates more questions than answers, but it was an interesting thing said by Mo yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's being honest, and that's fine. You know, and in the moment, he was being as honest as he could be, right? I mean, because he could have just said nothing, which from his perspective is probably better, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, from their perspective, it would probably be better if you didn't say that at all. But most generally pretty upfront with us. You know, he's typically, he's not going to tell you the whole truth, but he usually is as truthful as he can be. And that's what he was doing there. Unfortunately, there's a miscalculation there, whether it was not correctly assessing whether or not Nolan would approve a deal to Houston, or maybe it was the other side that they misread and it wasn't Houston at all. It was a different team.
Yeah, and I also don't know how he addresses the 2025 Cardinals without being somewhat upfront about...
Because he said that at the meetings.
Yeah, it's... When you talk about the 2025 Cardinals, you want to create runway for kids. You want to have Nolan Gorman at third. You want to be able to have Brendan Donovan at second. That way you can have the outfield set up the way that you want to have. It's like everything we've talked about a million times. Arenado is the first domino to basically everything else happening.
Yeah.
So he can sit here and say, well, I said it at the winter meetings because I thought a deal was just about done. But at the same time, you really can't talk about 2025 and be honest about it without acknowledging the fact that Arenado is likely to be moved.
And that's why he did it.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for weeks now, like trying to talk about the outfield or trying to talk about what you can't, because we have no idea what at bats are going to be available or what position's going to be available. Now, we can play the game. All right, well, if Arenado's here, then Gorman's at second and Donovan's probably in left. I guess that means they're going to play Nootbaar in center. Are they? Are they going to veer off of their defense in center field thing or what? So, you know, you can play that game, but it's really not defined. And moving Arenado defines everything.
Right.
Now you know, okay, Gorman's going to get his shot at third and Donovan's probably your primary second baseman and Noot stays in left. And we'll probably count on either Siani or Scott in center. And then, you know, there's room there to give at bats to Thomas DeJacy too. So even if they do move Arenado, by the way, I think we still need to see a healthy amount of Newton center, because that's the only way you're going to get a lot of at bats for DeJacy. And I think they need to get a lot of at bats for him. I don't think it's wise to go into 2026 not knowing what he is at the major league level.
I also think you
if you don't trade Arenado, then that's going to continue to, unless they come out and publicly state, we are not going to trade Nolan Arenado. He is not on the block. He is going to be the third baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals when the 2025 season comes to an end. Unless you state that and it's very truthful, if you go into the year and Arenado's still on the roster, but you know that deep down they still want to move him, I think that's counterproductive as well. Let's get the group on opening day that you kind of want it to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously that's the ideal. And it's to make it work, because this is the thing where the team doesn't have control, right? There are three parties here that have a say in this: the Cardinals, the other team, and Nolan Arenado.
Yeah.
So you have to find a team that Nolan Arenado approves of, or none of the other things matter.
Yeah, all three parts can say no.
And you'll have, it's very clear there are other teams that would welcome Nolan Arenado, but it might require you to take on or keep more of the money than you would like to. And if it comes down to that, I think you have to do it, because you have to create the opportunity. Think of it this way. Like, the way I would put it in my head is, whatever money I eat on Arenado is money that I'm spending on developing the future of my team.
Right.
Like, that's how I would justify it in my head. Now, I don't think I'd want to eat 80% of it. But what if you have to eat half? You still save half. And so let's say you're saving half. You owe him $27 million. This year, so let's just count that. Let's just divide that by two. So if it's all you have to do to move him is eat half of each year that's owed, right? Or each half of these next 2 years, whatever, however you want to do it. If you would still have to trade two or three other players to save that same amount of money, but you could do it with one guy,
right?
And not hurt your rotation depth and make sure you know. Now, I still would move a pitcher personally. I would be moving one of Michaelis or Matz. We know the Michaelis problem is the no trade, and he's been bad, and he makes a lot of money. So I'd still be looking to move Matz, because as it stands now, you do not have a rotation spot for McGreevy, and I don't want him just back at AAA. If I'm running the team, I want to see what is this guy at the major league level for 20, 25, 30 starts.
I have a hard time believing Steven Matz is going to be on this roster.
Yeah, I do too, and it would make sense to do it. Now, it may just be a matter of kind of letting some of this sort out, and somebody says, all right, you know what, we really need the pitching depth, and $12 million is not that big a deal for a solid lefty.
Yeah.
But
that's a value, maybe a value is too strong of a word, but that's a perfectly fine contract.
Yes, on a one-year risk. Yeah,
even
yeah.
with his health issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a big deal for a lot of these teams.
No, like that's not something.
Not a big deal for a normal Cardinals team.
When you look at the money that is being thrown around on mid-level pitchers,
yeah.
that Matt salary does not look crazy.
It's not crazy, but obviously the biggest problem is keeping him on the field.
Yeah, 100%. Mo said a couple other things. One of the things that kind of struck me, and I don't even know how much of a talking point this can even be, but I did find it, I get the sense that he's kind of in murky waters right now, because all his team of people, many of them aren't there anymore. And now all of a sudden it's the Rob Serfolios and other people have been brought in, and there's not like this, working chemistry that he's had for years and years and years. And I just get the sense that he made a comment to me that, previously if somebody was in a bad mood or it wasn't a good day to talk or whatever, you kind of knew, the rhythms of the office, and that doesn't exist right now. And I find that to be interesting to kind of illustrate or imagine what it looks like in the office for him. In his final season, where everything around him is changing.
Think how long he had a relationship with LaRocca.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary LaRocca. I mean, 30 years, 25 years, right? I mean, and this goes back to before Mo was a GM. This goes back probably to before he was even the assistant GM. Like, there's a difference between that and people you're just getting to know. But also, the way we talked about this on DGS today with me and Bernie and Dave, that, Mo is kind of in the position right now where his job is almost just to do the dirty work.
Yeah, 100%.
And it makes sense, because the Red Sox did Chaim Bloom dirty, right? He gets that job in one of the early years. They're like, hey, by the way, you got to trade Mookie Betts, and don't just go get the best return for him. You got to attach David Price's crappy contract to him too. So whatever that means, get rid of the money, and that's all we care about. So he had to go make a bad trade to dump David Price and to trade Mookie Betts and not get much in return. And that's basically was the downfall. He was put in a bad position early on in Boston. And I kind of appreciate that they're not putting him in that position here. You know, they've said it a little differently. They're like, well, he needs to work on building the farm system, and which he does. Like, you got to build that infrastructure before you want to worry too much about both, right? You don't want him doing two jobs. You want him doing one at a time. And then by next year, that other stuff will be set and he can move into the position Mo's in now. But if you're asking him to do both now, you're also putting him in the role of being the hangman, where, you know, you're firing people in the scouting department. You're going to have to make unpopular moves, like cut the payroll, trade Nolan Arenado, maybe trade other guys, maybe trade Sonny Gray later on, maybe Ryan Helsley later on, right? Well, you don't want him to be the bad guy.
No.
You want him to come in clean slate. The reset is done. And that doesn't mean spend right away, although you could, but doesn't mean that. But it means it's upward and forward when he takes over, as opposed to still doing dirty work.
You know, the more going from that to the next thing, arbitration stuff came out yesterday. I was a little surprised they didn't work out a 2-year deal with Brendan Donovan. I thought that was going to happen, and it still could.
It still can.
It still could. But I do wonder if it is more complicated right now for multi-year deals, because obviously Mo and Bloom can talk through things.
Right.
But I would also think that Mo doesn't want to make too many decisions that are impacting Bloom.
Yeah, I would imagine they would both talk about that. I mean, and I would imagine everybody would want a 4 or even 5-year deal on Donovan if you could agree on the number. You know, buy out the rest of his arb years, maybe a year or two of free agency. It would make sense for a player like that. That's stable. That's versatile. You're never going to be a team that doesn't need a Brendan Donovan.
Right.
Because he can be anything. Now, and high on base guys, tremendously valuable. So, you know, there's that part. You know, I always do. I laugh at these teams that, you know, will go to trial over like $175,000. Like, I think that's the case on Palante, right?
It's like, yeah, Palante filed at 2.1 and the Cardinals filed at 1.95.
Like that. I'm surprised that teams do that. I know what their argument is going to be. Their argument is going to be, if we settle higher on that one, the next time it comes up, we're going to have to do the same thing. And I said, yeah, but you know what's going to happen as we go along? You're also, the teams are going to make more money because the TV contracts get bigger and all of that. So like 10 years from now, you're going to be making more. I understand why they do it. But it's not, this is just one example. This is not the end of the world, right? This is, you know, I understand what they're doing. Everybody has their formulas and they want to stick with their formulas and they want to stick with their precedent so that they can control how fast salaries rise. I understand it. I just think it's silly when we're talking about such a small amount of money within the scope of a large team, but not as dumb as what the Cubs did with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, where you want to give him a huge contract.
I mean, you made a big deal to get this guy who's a rock star. He's got 1 year left. He's going into free agency at the end of 2025. I'm guessing you want to keep him.
You would sue.
I mean, I don't know why you'd make the trade and trade one of your top prospects to go get a guy for 1 year and not have any intent of keeping him. And you're gonna piss him off by going to arbitration over $2.5 million on a guy that's a stud like he is?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So $17.5 million to $15 million are the two numbers there. And $2.5 million's a lot of money, but not with a player at that level.
No, not with
it's nothing when you're trying to win goodwill
and sign him to $100+, you know,
I mean, it'd be a $500 million contract. Right. I mean, something like that.
So, yeah, I don't. I also think there's value in not going into that room.
Because you got to go in there and badmouth them.
Yeah. To me, you know, with the 200,000 minus whatever it is, the difference between Palante and the Cardinals, it's worth it to me for $150,000 to not have to go into a room to a guy who I'm telling, hey, you're an important part of this team. Yeah. You're our number 3 starter. We're proud of you, of what you did last year. You're part of this young core. This is the message you've been sending them. But now, because you're trying to avoid paying an extra $150,000, you're going to tell them actually how bad he is.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that setup. And I would get it if it was a bigger amount of money.
Right.
Right. But I mean, at that level, you know, these are teams that make so much money. I mean, think about that. That amount of money we're talking about is less than 1/3 of the major league minimum salary.
Yeah, it's nothing. It is absolutely nothing. The other ones are a little bit bigger. Nootbaar filed at 2.95. Cardinals at 2.45. Donovan was, they were $450,000 apart. Donovan filed at 3.3. Cardinals at 2.85.
Yeah. And even with those guys, I mean, again, just for the goodwill alone. Although, again, sometimes you're not going to rag the player, right? Like, I'm sure the argument against Nootbaar is just going to be he gets hurt too much.
Yeah, and
you know, it's like that's not you're not tearing down the player's performance. You're just like, well, he's just not been healthy enough.
Honestly, just watching how arbitration goes, if they go to arbitration against Pallante and they go to arbitration against Nootbaar, I think they win because their arguments, because the clubs tend to win first off. The system's kind of rigged for the teams, and it's a really easy argument on Nootbaar with his injury history, and it's a really easy argument for Pallante with his lack of track record.
Yeah, because he's mostly been a reliever. And
So that's... that's why they go to it. You know,
I get it. I know. Just like,
I don't like it.
Yeah, I know. And again, I understand, you know, because they say, well, it adds up. Because if we give it on all of them, it's $1 million. Okay. Well, you know, $1 million for a major league organization is not that much.
I mean, there's so many things you could change. I would rather not, you know, it just be you present packets of information and it's not
public. Also, why can't the arbitrator pick the middle ground?
Right.
You got to pick one or the other.
Pick a winner and a loser. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, all right. So we will go through the weekend and we'll see if Nolan Arenado is still a Cardinal
on
Monday.
I can't wait for something to happen there so we just don't have to keep asking the same questions. But we have to. You know, every day or two, there's some minor new thing.
Right.
Right. You'll get a report like the one we talked about the other day with Morosi and, oh, well, Seattle and Detroit. Like, you're always getting these little bits. So you have to examine it. Because everything we want to talk about with this team is somewhat related to that.
And even yesterday, Mo said to us that they want to still sign relief pitching and they still want to sign a right-handed bat that can play in the outfield. None of that's happening if Nolan Arenado's on the team. Probably.
Why do they want to do that?
They just do.
Where does that player fit?
I'm not sure.
Who's not going to make the team because of that?
Victor Scott.
Okay.
That'd be my first thing. Hopefully not Thomas DeJacy. Maybe Luke and Baker doesn't make the team.
Well, he's not. Yeah, I mean, as it is now, he probably wouldn't. But it's fine. I mean, it's not the end of the world. But why can't Thomas DeJacy play some left field?
I would put him out there. By the way, Andrew Kittredge gets $10 million from Baltimore. Good for him.
He had a big year. Yeah. And by the way, it tells you where the relief market's headed.
Yep.
Because that's a setup man, not a closer. And he got $10
million. $10 million. Yeah, that's a good deal. Have a great weekend.
See you, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly, and that's going to do it for this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Have a wonderful weekend to all of you as well. We'll talk to you again on Monday here on KMOX.